Dad, this is ludicrous. Why do you keep avoiding the doctor?
Because I feel fine. I'll go to the doctor when I don't feel fine. Besides, I don't like Dr. Jennings. He's got a model of a colon on his desk. He keeps his tongue depressors in it.
My doctor thinks I'm taking hallucinogenic drugs. How do I know? Let's just say a little bird told me.
Mrs. Simpson, I'm afraid your husband is dead. Oh, April Fool's. He's very much alive.
Doctors are the worst of all. You pick up the same disease three or four times, they start lecturing you like it's your fault. You want a bite?
Not if you skipped it to me across a pool of disinfectant.
The doctor said I wouldn't have so many nosebleeds if I kept my finger out of there.
Liability waiver.
Don't read it, just sign it. It simply says you won't hold us responsible if you die as a result of gross negligence. It's a standard form.
You think I should call him and apologize?
Yes, he's a doctor.
10 after 3, 580 CFRA, doctor is in the studio. Dr. Barry Dworkin. I love The Simpsons. Am I ever going to get tired of The Simpsons?
Well, it looks like they're canceling it, eh? Did you hear?
No, I haven't heard. Tell me that. They're canceling it?
Fox wanted to cut the cost of producing the show. And they asked them to cut their salaries, all the voice actors, by I think 40% or something. And they're not wanting to do that. Although they're making a fortune off of the show, and meaning Fox is making a fortune off of the
billions
show.
Billions and billions and billions.
So remember they tried last season.
Remember they tried to replace all the voice actors at one time.
Ain't gonna happen.
No. I don't think they're gonna cancel it either. Hey, Barry, listen, I'm so glad you're here Wednesday afternoon. I'm actually. When I knew I was coming down here. By the way, Ron Corbett, I'm here. Rob is off today. The clinic story. I run it, you know, just getting so many calls. You can't go anywhere without hearing about this clinic story. And I'm just, what's your take on this story, Barry?
I think it's overblown, frankly. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with a small number of people. It's not a process where people are spreading infection everywhere. It was over a 10-year span with people who were potentially exposed to instrumentation that during endoscopies or colonoscopies that may not, emphasis on may, not have been completely cleaned. And in no way am I minimizing the fact that I think it's good that they found this and they took corrective action.
Give us the stats again.
But again, I mean, when you're looking at the risk of infection,
give us the risk stats, yes.
So, you know, I believe they were mentioning for hepatitis B infection, it was 1 in 1 million all the way to 1 in billions for HIV.
Yes.
So you have to keep those risks in perspective. And I think the energy that we are spending on talking about this kind of risk is minuscule when you think of all the other diseases out there that people are willingly contributing to their own health demise and not even giving a second thought to it.
Right.
So you have to keep that in mind. I think what makes this sensationalized is that it's at a clinic. It was tools that were used, diagnostic tools that were used that may not have been cleaned properly or contaminated, and somehow that becomes the big boogeyman out of everything.
Let me ask you this, Barry. Yeah. With that as the background, and I wanted to get those stats out there, the risk stats out there as well. One thing that has struck me, and I'd be interested in your take on this, all the news stories that I've read and so many of the phone calls, there seems to be a bit of a common theme to it. And a quote that I've read over and over again now in news stories is someone that is receiving one of these letters or expects to receive one of these letters saying that this has really shaken their faith in the healthcare system and his or her. And given the risk, as you say, 1 in 1 million, 1 in 1 billion, I'm struck that by that comment. And I'm just wondering if that means or can we conclude from that that the relationship between, you know, patient and doctor, the relationship between, you know, taxpayers, whatever, and the healthcare system is tenuous at best, because people have been pretty darn quick to use this story saying, well, this has shaken my faith in the healthcare system. One doctor and one private health clinic, you've given us a risk assessment, and yet that quote, I believe, is in every single story. This has shaken my faith in the healthcare system.
What you're pointing to is a very common human reaction that people have, and it's called the example rule. And this goes to a book that was written by Dan Gardner on risk, the science and politics of fear, where when you can cite a particular example that scares the bejesus out of you, right? So you get a letter saying that you may have been exposed to hepatitis B or C or HIV, it becomes a very real, tangible threat, even though, and our brains aren't designed to assess risk in terms of 1 in 1 million. So, you know, you want to say what a 1 in 1 billion is, it's a drop of water in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. Or, 1 in 1 billion is a is a drop of water that you put into the ocean type of thing. I mean, really very small amounts that you don't even you can't conceive of, because it's just our brains aren't adapted that way. Yeah. Our brains are adapted to respond to threats.
Does it also mean, and forgive us for people listening, Barry is going to take some calls. We already have some people waiting. Let me quickly give you the numbers here. 521-TALK, 521-8255. Star 580 if you're on the Bell Mobility System. That is a free call. The toll-free number, 1-800-580-CFRA, 580-2372. If you have any sort of a medical question for Dr. Dworkin, give us a shout and we will get you on the air. But just quickly, my last question for you, and maybe I didn't make myself clear. It seems that people are unhappy with the healthcare system. They're very quick to say, well, this has shaken my faith. I think if people were happy and feeling upbeat and positive about our healthcare system, I don't know whether this one incident would shake it to the degree that everybody says, well, this has shaken my faith in the healthcare system.
Well, my tack on it goes back to using that example as a means of coming to a conclusion about everything, right? So in this case, shaken my faith simply means that the example that they were exposed to, in this case, potential for infection, has overwhelmed the ability to say, okay, as you mentioned at the beginning, it's one clinic out of thousands and thousands. You don't see people, you don't have reports of people presenting with abnormal incidences or prevalences of HIV, hepatitis B or C. You don't see that happening. So if you're not seeing that happening, it's extremely unlikely that you're seeing these clinics all having poor sanitation and disinfection standards. So the point being that somebody is getting this letter, it's being presented in the news as if it is a common phenomenon, right? If this goes national, it gives a national perspective, like somehow this is happening everywhere. And so people then assume that if it's getting so much attention, it's got to be a big thing. It's got to be something that's everywhere. Yeah. So your trust is shaken, when really, and it goes for anything, you know, toxic something, breast implants, which were eventually shown not to cause harm, but came out in the news as this harmful thing. Company goes bust. They find out that...
Barry, we are going to have to take some calls. Actually, I do have another question for you, but let's take some calls. Some people have been waiting patiently. Again, 521-TALK, 521-8255. Give us a shout, and we will get you on the air to ask Barry a question. Let's start with Thomas, phoning us from Orleans this afternoon. Good afternoon, Thomas.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Hi.
Yeah, I have a very unique problem. I have the Achilles tendon joins the heel.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting swollen every. For the last 2 years, I am having this problem.
Okay.
And I had been to a physio and ultrasound, acupuncture, and even shock therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing seems to work. You know, it's just like a horseshoe attached to my back of the heel.
Mm-hmm.
And going up and down the steps, I'm having a hard time.
Was there a tear in the Achilles tendon? Was it torn when they investigated? Was an ultrasound done, or any other imaging study done to look at the tendon itself?
They said there is no tear,
but it is strained and it is hurting.
It's hurting. Yeah.
And what kind of activities do you normally do during the day?
During the day, now practically nothing.
Practically nothing.
Because I can't walk. I used to walk quite a bit.
Well,
about 4 or 5 kilometers almost a day. But now I can't do anything.
And you've seen physiotherapists. What have they done to try and help you rehabilitate the foot and the Achilles tendon?
And they did some ultrasound and some kind of I don't know what they did. At the physio,
mm-hmm.
They did some massaging.
Right.
And after a while, it wasn't helping me at all. Then I went for the acupuncture.
Right.
It didn't help. Finally, I went to the shock therapy. Somebody suggested to me to go to shock therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that didn't help either. So I'm stuck with the pain. I don't know. Is there any other way I can...
any other things that you can do?
Yeah.
Well, usually it's... And this has been going on for how long now?
It's about 2 years now.
So this is more of a chronic nature
that
has happened.
Yes, it is.
That makes it a little bit more difficult, given that it is more, usually anything more than 3 months is more chronic pain. One of the things you have to look at as well, especially when, because normally the tendon should heal over time.
Oh, Okay.
So you have to look at what people, what you're wearing, the shoes that you're wearing, whether your feet need any support, special shoes, that kind of stuff. And then also other things that you could do is see an athletic therapist who will work a little bit differently than a physiotherapist on trying to stretch out the tendon and to try and improve mobility. Okay. That's one of the other things. It's called they're called athletic therapists.
Athletic therapist.
And that may be a little helpful for you. There's also specific exercises they will do and recommend that you do afterwards. But I found a lot of people do respond quite well to an athletic therapist after they, you know, especially if they tried everything else.
There you go. There's
so that might be something to try at least, because it's certainly not a surgical correction. There's no tear in it. So that's not the answer. The answer is trying to stretch this out to try and improve its mobility. It's probably very tight, which is why it makes it very painful to walk. It's healed up very tight.
So there's something new for Thomas to try right there.
An
athletic therapist.
Okay, I'll try that.
Thomas, thank you very much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. I want to get Shirley on. Shirley's been waiting right from the start of the show, Barry, I must say.
Sure.
People are waiting for you on Wednesday afternoon. Shirley phoning us from Rockland. Good afternoon, ma'am.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Doctor, I have a question for you. I have a blocked artery in my groin area on my right leg.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a CT scan. And following that, the vascular surgeon gave me a rough idea of what he would do.
Mm-hmm.
He explained for some reason, he didn't go into detail, but he said he couldn't do the angioplastic thing,
mm-hmm.
so that he would insert a tube from my left leg for the blood flow into my right,
mm-hmm.
which only has 35% of the blood flow at the moment.
Okay.
And he went into a little bit of detail, but not too much. He said he would probably keep me in the hospital like minimum or maximum 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
So when their meeting was more or less over, he was directing me out the door, and he said, of course, I have to tell you there are risks. And I said, okay, what kind of risks? You know? And he said, well, you could lose your leg.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't give me any details. By this time, we're out the door. So he said, well, you think about it. You don't have to let me know today, and let me know what your decision is. So I'm wondering, what would that mean? Would it mean I would have to have my leg amputated, or would it be paralyzed?
Well, that's an excellent question, because it's one thing to mention that there's a risk of losing the leg. It's another thing to know if that risk is, you know, one out of every 10 times, one out of every 100, one out of every 1,000.
Wouldn't you want to make that the lead, too, by the way?
Yeah, I know.
I was writing that up as a story. I might be tempted to make that the lead.
So
but anyway,
the question that you need to have answered from them is, out of the number of how many operations in a row would result in one person having lost a leg, meaning an amputation? Because if they block off the artery, it's one of the complications. If there's bleeding or damage to the artery where there's no blood flow going down to the rest of the leg, that leg ends up being starved for oxygen and the muscle tissue and all the tissue dies because there's no blood flow to it. So you need to find out from them exactly what that risk is. Because if they tell you it's 1 in 1,000, you may go, you know, okay, 1 in 1,000 I can live with.
Actually, he did say that, and I said to him, well, I was kind of stunned for a few seconds, and I said, well, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is the risk? And he thought for just a second, he said 1.
Well, that's still 10% if it's 1 out of 10,
right?
So I would, you know, again, I would ask them for specific, because the surgeons do know this from just on the basis of the procedures done, of what the actual risks are when doing the surgery. And they'll be able to tell you what the risks are in terms of one in something to give you a better idea to make a decision. Because you can't make a decision on the basis of, well, there's a risk that you might lose your leg.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A few follow-up questions.
A few follow-up questions, exactly.
Shirley, I hope that helps.
Okay, it does. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Hey,
thanks very much. All right, we're back. Who is that, Barry? What show is that? Can I take a guess?
Is that Marcus Welby? Is that what that is? Yes.
Oh, okay. Big thumbs up from Chris. Marcus Welby. Welcome back. We're in the studio here. Dr. Barry Dworkin. I don't think Chris remembers Marcus Welby. He must have just Googled that.
That's a long time.
521-8255. 521-TALK. Main number here at the studio. If you have a question for Dr. Dworkin, give us a shout. We do have some lines available. Star 580. If you're on the Bell Mobility System, that is a free call. And the toll-free number, 1-800-580-CFRA, 580-2372. Let's start with Jim, phoning us from Almont this afternoon. Good afternoon, Jim.
How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too good. For Doc, for about a little over a week, I've had been sick, and I stopped eating, so my stomach was eventually, I think, quite empty.
Mm-hmm.
I had flu. At least I had phlegm coming up all the time and spitting it out.
Right.
And last Sunday, I started to say I had to eat something, so I started with porridge, and I had about three or four bowls of porridge each day. This sickness also caused me to have headaches,
mm-hmm.
just above the eyes,
right,
from side to side.
Okay.
And the headache, when I was eating the porridge, I finally increased my meal, and I'm back up to a fairly normal meal right now.
Okay.
But my headaches are still there, and they're so bad that even my eyelids ache.
Mm-hmm. Now, when
I thought it was either food poisoning or the flu, or I don't know what.
So when this first started, this illness started, did you have chills and shakes and sweats, that kind of thing also?
A little bit of sweats, a little bit of cool.
Okay, what about
nothing else?
No muscle aches or anything?
No, sir.
Okay, fatigue? Any fatigue when that happened?
Did I what?
Fatigue, like feeling extremely tired.
Please.
When you felt really, did you feel really tired when you first got sick?
Where did I get you off the speakerphone, sir? I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah, did you feel really tired after?
Yes,
you...
yes, I do.
Okay, and you said you're coughing. When you cough, are you bringing anything up? You said
yes,
there's some, any particular color to it?
I can't see it, sir, but I swallowed it.
Okay. And you said that over this past week, this headache, how long does it last when you have the headache? Is it there all the time? Does it come and go?
I can explain this to you.
Sure.
It's going to sound weird, sir. When I go to sleep, I don't have a headache because I've done something else to get rid of it.
Okay.
I took maybe a Tylenol of normal strength.
Okay.
Okay, so when I went to bed, I would wake up in the morning about 2 o'clock. And my headache would be there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it's been doing that almost all the time now. 2 o'clock, bang, just like going to the bathroom all the time, eh?
So this is in the 2 o'clock in the morning?
Yes.
Okay.
And but when I get up, have my breakfast,
right,
and eat a bit, it seems to die down.
Okay, and
you know, Jim, Dr. Dworkin's looking like a detective here. You're asking questions like a detective. Are you going to amaze us here? It seems like you're figuring something out here.
It certainly sounds like, you know, there was no headache prior to this, right? It was just a week ago that it started. It's frontal, meaning just above the eyes. And normally when you have frontal headaches that are relieved with Tylenol or other pain relievers, it's usually more of a tension-type headache, usually associated with flu-like illnesses or viral illnesses, especially in the absence of any limb weakness, behavior changes, vision changes. There's no seizures, there's no hearing problems. Those are the things that, you know, would lead you to believe there's something else going on. But this is across a band in the front of the head. It's on both sides, so it's unlikely to be anything inside the head that's doing that, to have pain on both sides.
Yes.
So this certainly sounds like you're still in a recovery phase from an infectious process, given that you can pinpoint when this happened. It's going to take time to get better. The reason it pops up again at 2 o'clock in the morning is that the medication you're taking for the headache really only lasts about 4 hours, and then it wears off.
Okay.
And so the headache will come back. And I bet you if you took something at 2 o'clock in the morning again, the headache would go away, and by 6 o'clock in the morning, the pain would come back. So it usually is about a 4-hour span that, especially for acetaminophen or Tylenol, will work.
I could take more, another Tylenol?
How much are you taking?
Well, just one tablet a
day.
Yes,
so that's the 325 or the 500?
Eh? Oh, no, I don't know. It's a normal strength.
A normal strength, so it's 325.
Yes.
So really, you're taking more of a, I would say, a pediatric dose.
Oh, yes.
So you can get away with two of those tablets. It probably will last you a little bit longer for the pain relief.
Could I take one Tylenol super strength or extra strength?
The extra strength is only 500 milligrams. And again, usually people will take two of the extra strength or three of the regulars to give you the same amount.
Oh, yes.
The other thing to keep in mind, though, is if you have other medical conditions, so, you know, people have diabetes, blood pressure problems, lung problems, kidney problems, I mean, the list can go on. If this persists and you're finding that things are still, you know, you're still haven't recovered, you're still feeling really tired, it might be good just to see your physician just to evaluate if there's anything else that has happened. But other things, chronic diseases tend to prolong illnesses because your body is already working from a compromised state. It's already weakened from, you know, kidney problems, as I mentioned, or any of these other problems that people may have. And so it really takes a lot of energy out of you, and that can contribute to the fatigue and certainly give you the headache as well. So it's still worth checking out if this continues. It's not good to have headaches persistently and continuously, but nevertheless, 1 week history, headaches are resolved with medication. There's no neurological, what we call neurological sequelae, which means neurological changes.
Yes.
So it's something to treat right now and probably just follow up with your physician if this goes on by the, you know, by the end of the week and you're still feeling this way. Might be
Thank
good to follow
very,
it up.
Thank you very, very much.
Oh, you're welcome, Jim.
Jim, thanks very much for the call.
Bye-bye. Yeah.
Nicely done, Dr. Dworkin.
Thank you.
You're a Sherlock there or something. How are those new headphones working for you, by the way?
They are absolutely fantastic.
Can people still watch us on television? Do they still do this? For people listening, Dr. Dworkin has a new pair of headphones. He showed up, took the plastic off. All you researched these, and these are the best headphones you can get?
They're very comfortable, especially for the radio show.
I've given my
Sunday.
Children it's stuffed great. Animals that are less plush than those headphones. People should look at the TV right now. You look like a bloody rabbit or something. They look comfy, though, Barry.
Don't care what it looks like. It's comfortable.
Let's welcome Barry from Ottawa onto the show. Good afternoon, Barry.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking the call. Dr. Dworkin,
yes.
I greatly appreciate that you take the time and offer the knowledge to the public that you do.
Thank you.
Just wanted to say that I had a similar problem with a sore Achilles tendon to an earlier caller that you received.
Yes.
And after a couple of years of pain and pain from therapies, including sports therapy, by the way.
Right.
The problem was finally solved with something called prolotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you probably know about it.
Yes.
It's an injection of the Achilles tendon. And I just thought that Thomas might like to hear about it.
Yeah, it's something that for prolotherapy there, I mean, the injections, the hypothesis is it causes some local inflammation in the area. It brings
prolo?
In prolo, P-R-O-L-O,
okay.
Prolotherapy. I've looked it up. It, you know, for some people it helps. The problem is it's not consistent when it's used. And we have to be very careful, especially when you inject into a tendon. There's always a risk of a tendon rupture. So you have to be
especially
careful how much.
Especially the Achilles tendon.
Which is one of the reasons why it's, I mean, prolotherapy would be, I would say, less potential to cause harm than injecting a steroid into the tendon. Because steroid injections into tendons can weaken the fibers in the tendon and increase the risk of rupture, whereas prolotherapy really won't do that. But again, I'd like to say that there's a lot of evidence to show that it works well all the time. The problem is that it's not consistent, so it may be helpful for certain conditions, but not
right.
for all. But I'm glad you found that it was helpful.
Well, it was for somebody like Thomas. I was in a similar situation.
Right.
I found it difficult to walk and was losing mobility.
Right.
But to talk about problems.
I think Barry's winking in and out with the
yeah,
phone.
Yeah, Barry, we're losing you a little bit. Listen, thanks very much for phoning and making that suggestion. I hope Thomas was still listening. Dr. Dworkin, always a treat. That's all our time this afternoon. Impressive. Always impressed the way you do this. You know, you don't take notes, although you do have an iPad nowadays, so you can do it.
Well, it's closed.
It is closed, so, you know, very impressive. And thanks very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. My pleasure.
Again, for people who missed the start of the show, relax about the clinic. One in million, one in 1 billion. You see the headline there in The Citizen? You can't trust anybody? A bit of an extreme reaction?
It's extreme.
Okay.
And it's the same thing, you know, goes with any type of professional endeavor. The first reaction is always to rag on the entirety. And it's just not an appropriate thing to do. You have to look at things, critically think about it, sit back and count to 10 first before you respond. And I think in this case, people are not counting to 10. They're just blurting out stuff. They're upset. But for many people that are complaining about this, it doesn't even affect them.
Good advice. Thanks very much,
Barry.
Nice seeing you again.